Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us in the studio Charlie Fleischman, who began writing in 1980 as an ad sales representative for the Willamette Valley Observer, a progressive weekly tabloid in Eugene, Oregon. He enjoyed the chance to do something creative and to be involved with talented people putting out an excellent newspaper. He co-edited a newsletter for the Oregon Track Club Masters Track and Field Group in Eugene, both writing for and editing the monthly publication for 10 years. He started an email newsletter for his high school class in 2007, mainly to connect with classmates for the 50-year reunion that year, and he still writes and sends out an edition a few times each year. In Port Townsend, where Charlie lives, he became a writer with a byline after answering the Leader's ad for a part-time high school sports reporter. Years ago, he started Books and Writers, an online service for authors and publishers to fix incorrect book information on bookseller sites. He also collaborated with authors to create and maintain websites to feature their work and did some writing and editing for the sites. Eventually, he joined with his journalist son, Glenn, to provide Amazon and Barnes & Noble book ranking statistics for interested authors and publishers. Clients could receive hourly, daily, or weekly updates in order to satisfy their urge to track their book's progress. A few years ago, the data feeds became unreliable, and Books and Writers was shut down. In 2012, Charlie found a new calling at our radio station, KPTZ, learning to edit audio and becoming sound engineer, editor for the weekly Nature Now broadcast until the fall of 2018. In late 2013, he took on the additional role of recording and editing In Conversation, and he's still at it. And I am so glad to have you in a different capacity in the studio today. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you. It does feel a little strange to be sitting in front of the mic instead of looking through a window at you interviewing somebody else.
And I think it's great because so often we've sat in the same configuration while I do telephone interviews and then talked about them after we've clicked off and they're finished. And so to me, anyway, it seems completely natural.
It feels good.
Good. So I want to start with saying that it seems to me that you really do enjoy our taping in the studio because you get to listen to writers discussing their work and writing lives. And I so appreciate that the content is of interest to you. From your bio, it seems like you've been interested in writers for really quite a while. So what did you find most interesting about providing web services for writers?
A lot of people, particularly authors, particularly first-time authors, wanted those book rankings, wanted to know, where is my book? Am I number 3,400,000? Am I number 72? Did it change from day to day, from hour to hour? Which a lot of people wanted to know even that frequently. It became something of an obsession, I think, for some of the authors. And it was pretty interesting to be involved with them. So I had a lot of correspondence. I handled all the correspondence for the site. So I was back and forth with a lot of different authors and got some insight into what they were doing. And before that, when I was working on the earlier version of what I was doing, when I was cleaning up all the information on the websites, the book distributors in those days seemed to have a lot of incorrect information, or the cover image would change from the time it first went in their catalog to the time it got published, or the author's name was wrong, or the page count was wrong, all those things. There was a lot of bad information, more often bad than good. So Amazon was around. A few others were trying to get a foothold then in Amazon's early days, and they all failed. So I had found out who to contact and handled that for people. And plus, the other advantage of that is I always ask them for a copy of their book. So I accumulated some very nice books of various types from people, just so I could see what they were doing and make sure what they were telling me could get to the bookseller sites. And sometimes I needed to scan the cover, that kind of thing.
So you were like a middleman.
Yes. Eventually it changed because the distributors and the booksellers got their act together. There were less places for it to go, less chances of mistakes. And the system worked itself out and put me out of a job.
So in those days, it must have been quite a job. People wanting hourly statistics? I mean, were you sitting at your computer all day long and all night long?
No. My son Glenn, who combined with me on this, brought in somebody to program, and then he was able to handle it after that. And it was just set up automatically to go in, retrieve the data.
From where?
From Amazon's feed.
Okay,
and from Barnes & Noble.
I see. So the booksellers themselves were, you said they had inaccurate information. So where was the accurate information that you found?
Well, the accurate information was there for a long time. We go through Amazon's web services and through Barnes & Noble's site. You could go in there and what they call scrape the information out of there legally and use it. Eventually, it was inconsistent. Barnes & Noble particularly, it just wasn't feeding the way it was before, and we couldn't really get it on a regular basis, and we dropped the information from them and just went with Amazon, and then eventually Amazon was, some days you'd get it, some days you wouldn't get it. It just wasn't consistently there the way it needed to be, and we said, okay, if we can't provide the service that people are paying us for, we're going to give up the service.
So it leads me to think, how is it today? We don't know.
We don't know, and it's been a few years now. We're not going to go back and, and look at it. It's, I think if anything, there's probably less access to it than there was then.
But meanwhile, you have a wonderful library of books.
Yes, I did get a number of books.
And have you read them all?
Some of them, yeah. Some of them are gone by this time because that's been a while.
Yeah, that's exciting though. I think that is part of the writing life. Books, right, getting them, right, keeping them. So we're going to switch now, because I'm interested to know, in your current life as sound engineer and editor for In Conversation, what are some of the things writers have said during the tapings for our show that have been most memorable to you?
A lot of the people that have been interviewed have written about personal experiences, which I guess is pretty typical of many authors and poets, writers and poets. I think the ones that struck me the most were the ones where they talked about a family member, a friend, and a particular incident, or just how they impacted their lives. A lot of what I really enjoy about it is just quality of the writing. You've interviewed some really wonderful writers of various sorts, and it's enjoyable to do that. I could kind of walk you through the process a little bit. I get to listen to it once when it gets recorded. I'm not going to really hear it that much. It's just kind of keeping an eye on things and making sure everything gets done. But I'm not absorbing it the way I would if I were just sitting there and listening. I'll take it and edit it and do a one edit all the way through, whether I do it in one shot or I do it in a couple of pieces. And then I'll do another listen to it after that, maybe not even right away, but a few days apart so I could hear it again. So I get to really listen to everything three times. And the final result, hopefully, is what the author or the poet would like to have it sound like. And I want it to be the way it should be to present their work and to present them in a good, coherent manner.
We tape for about 30 minutes, and you reduce it a little bit because our program length has to be a little short of 30 minutes. So how do you go to the editing bench with 30 or so, maybe 32 minutes of our conversation and create that wonderful shape that they all turn into?
There are a number of ums and ahs and you knows and some flubs here and there where people want to restate something. Most of the time, those items, by the time you get done, there's a couple minutes come out. And lately, we've been trying to stay around 30 minutes and end up with around 27 to 28, and that seems to be working
well
at this point. So I usually, there's no specific number that we're given, and nobody has told us not to do what we're doing, so we just keep doing it. In terms of length. So we usually end up generally in the 27-something or maybe in the low to middle 28s.
There's some music, and there's the interlude where you tell the new listener who is talking.
Right. And then there's a closing music. We put in that a few years ago. So we open and close with two different parts of the same music.
Well, I know that everyone who's been interviewed has been very excited about how they sound and how wonderful the interview sounds. And they don't know necessarily what was taken out. The you knows, the ums, the ahs, the, you know, give me a minute kind of things. I know that most of them are very nervous about listening. I send a link to the podcast and they go, I don't know if I'm going to be able to listen to this. And I'll go, oh, you'll love it. I've listened to it. It's great. And then they listen, they go, that sounded terrific.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to judge yourself, especially when you're talking and you're trying to concentrate on giving answers and being coherent as people want to be. There are times where I have to edit out actual parts of it where we've either run so long that there's more than we could use, or there's something that just doesn't work really well in there, which is not often. That sometimes somebody, when they're being interviewed, will start to say something and then start to say something else, and you lose the flow. Some amount of the editing is to try to keep it flowing and not have too much back and forth where people change their mind when they start to talk, and then they go on two or three different tracks. And that does happen more often than you would think. When you're being interviewed, it's just not... it's not a straight flow.
I want to interrupt you and say that sounds an awful lot like editing a piece of writing for revision, because we do that as writers. We have scatological thinking, we come up with a new association, and then we have to decide, what is this piece of writing about? And so those same writers, I'm sure when they're looking at their work, do exactly what you've done with the editing of the tape.
Yeah, I think the audio, like, we're dealing with is a lot lighter editing than a written manuscript would be. It really varies from one to the other. There's some that I do a minimal amount of editing on, and there's some that it's just like one after the other that I have to take things out or do a little bit of just reworking and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm trying to give you a compliment here because I think you do a brilliant job. And from my experience writing, how you describe editing the recordings is a lot the same.
Thank you.
You are listening to In Conversation, discussions on writing and the writing life with Sheila Bender on KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. Today, Sheila is talking with KPTZ sound engineer Charlie Fleischman about his own writing, his work with authors, and his accomplished editing for In Conversation.
You have told me on more than one occasion that you like being in the background, as editors always, whether it's in print or in the media, editors are those people who are in the background making the people in the foreground shine. So here you are today, not in the background, and you...
Dragged willingly but hesitantly in front of the mic.
In an email to you when I had this idea that it's time for me to interview you, you said, you're just not going to leave this alone, are you? So, okay. And it's true. I have to say that in our years together, has only one other writer needed a little coaxing. Usually a writer is so excited about being asked to talk about their writing and share their writing and build their audience. So it's always a little bit different for me to beg somebody to please be on my program, but I'm happy that I did. And then you revealed that you've actually written from time to time, aside from the newspaper and the newsletters, and you are a writer. Writers write, and you're not really in the background in those instances where you are the person sending out the newsletter, writing the articles in the Leader and in the paper in Eugene, the ads. So the part of yourself that isn't revealed in your bio is the personal writing that you've done. And I know, because you admitted it, that you have a piece of writing written as a eulogy / elegy to a dear friend. And I'm wondering if you might tell us about him and then read your piece.
Okay. I lived in Eugene for about 30 years and was involved a lot in the running community, Oregon Track Club, both as a fan of track and field and somebody who ran for, I guess, about 20 years or so. And there was a group formed called the Oregon Track Club Masters, which is for people, track and field people, 30 and over, and put on meets and had monthly meetings and all kinds of things. I was involved in as president at one point, some other things. But I did, with a good friend, we co-edited a newsletter, a monthly newsletter for the Masters, probably for about 10 years. And one of the people that I met along the way turned out to be one of my best friends ever, and unfortunately passed away at a relatively early age. And I wrote about him for the newsletter. This is from the spring of 2002. And he just is somebody I remember so well from then. I've never forgotten to this day. And I'd like to read what I wrote about him. I first met Joe McKim at an Oregon Track Club Masters meeting about 20 years ago. He didn't look like a runner. He was short and muscular and around age 50 at the time. Someone introduced us, and I believe we spoke briefly and then moved on to converse with others. A few days later, he spotted me running on the bike path, and we discovered we lived about a mile apart. That was the beginning of a long and rewarding friendship, altered by Joe's untimely death on February 14th, 2002, at age 72. Altered but not ended, as no one who knew Joe will ever forget him. There were lots of friends in Joe's life. It was almost impossible to go anywhere with him and not run into several people he knew. And he remembered most everyone. Maybe not a name, but surely his or her face and much about that person. To paraphrase what someone said about Joe recently, you either were a friend or hadn't met him yet. I found over the years my first impression of Joe as a runner was totally wrong. He was a solid mid-pack competitor with a strong determination to become better and to leave it all on the course in every race he entered. He was one of the earliest members of the Fifth Street Market Saturday running group and ran regularly with me and other runners of all abilities. That led inevitably to the marathon, and Joe spent countless hours on training runs, improving his fitness, and learning what it took to go 26.2 miles. The marathon was likely not the best distance for Joe, since he tended to get leg cramps when he ran that far, but that never stopped him or caused him to look for something less to try. He was a competitor, pure and simple, running in several marathons and wanting more. But his heart had other ideas. 15 years ago, at the end of a long training run, Joe didn't feel quite right and quickly found out why. Bypass heart surgery was performed immediately and led to a somewhat reduced lifestyle. No more marathons, but light running was still a possibility for a while. Eventually, Joe found another type of marathon. He and his trusty steed, Mike, took up endurance riding. That involves sitting on your horse and letting the animal do the running, trotting, and walking for either the 25 or 50-mile distance. Joe really loved the camaraderie and spirit of the rides and thrived on the competitive challenge for the years he was able to participate. Then there was his love for wood and what he created from it. The beautifully balanced drift boat, the carefully designed and finished fir and spruce oars, and the incredible sailboat he was never able to finish. Joe also decided to craft hollow spars or sailboat masts and asked me to assist with the process. One of the tapered beauties graced my backyard, serving as a flagpole. It reached up 20 feet and was a daily reminder of our creative effort and longtime friendship. 2 years ago, Joe called to ask if I'd like to walk in the early mornings. He was feeling out of shape, and I shared that feeling. That was the start of our regular 4-mile jaunts along the Willamette River, out to the Owosso Bridge and back. We usually ventured out 2 or 3 times a week when we were able and the weather was willing. We watched the river levels rise and fall, tried to identify birds we hadn't seen before, and looked for that lone gray squirrel who lived in a decaying tree and darted across our path many a morning. We felt fortunate to be able to walk near the river and enjoy what nature offered each day. Joe never thought he was someone special, but he was. Special in the way his positive and upbeat outlook made everyone around him feel good. Special in the many ways he helped his friends just because he liked to. Special to his family as he never ceased being a concerned and loving husband, father, and grandfather. Joe never realized what he gave all of us, but we did, and will always remember.
Well, that brings me to tears. When did you write this?
2002. So the dates and the references are go back into there. And I wrote it, I think, within a few months after he died. And he died on Valentine's Day of February 14th
you
of 2002.
You just compelled to sit down and write it?
Yeah. I had such a strong feeling of our friendship. And I knew how much he meant to people in that group, too, mm-hmm. who were going to get that newsletter, because he knew everybody. Mm-hmm. And they all loved him. And he was the kind of guy who would... If somebody was sick or somebody just had an operation or whatever, I'd see him and he'd say, well, I was over to see so-and-so today because they weren't feeling right or they just got home from the hospital or this and that. He just was such a giving and warm and thoughtful person in so many ways. And I I miss him a lot to this day.
That really comes through in the writing. The other thing that is interesting to me is this particular piece of writing focuses so much on his determination to stay active in one way or another. And it goes from training to run, running a marathon, down to the 4-mile walks and the squirrel. That squirrel image is so lovely because it puts us in that very private place between the two of you. The thing you look for, it's very small compared to the other bigger achievements. And therefore, we trust you as the writer when you say that he was all these other things to people. And this is what he was to you. He was a companion in motion, great motion, who I imagine kept you in motion.
Yeah, and he was probably about 5'3". He was this little guy. He worked in the woods. He worked on road crews. He did heavy physical labor his whole life. And he was just like a little bull. And he just was a special person in my life and in many people's lives.
So this piece went out in the newsletter?
Yes.
Did you get response?
I think I did. It's been 17 years now, so I'm not sure exactly what I heard back on it, but I think I did at the time. And I was glad I had a forum, someplace where I could share that with other people who wanted to read something about him.
So in the years following writing this piece, have you written more personal writing as opposed to the newspaper writing?
No, I've never really gotten to that point. It's been more of a business kind of thing. If I'm working on websites, there's times where I just had to write things for people, or I've probably done a lot more editing than I've ever done writing. The editing part seemed to come a lot easier to me as far as whatever my skills are. Seem to translate into that better than putting the words down in the first place.
Well, you know me, I'm hopeful that because you've brought this piece forward today and read it to a new audience, you'll somehow want to sit down and write some more. There are always things to write about, and the observations that you had along that trail with Joe, I'm sure you can make those observations. I know you walk regularly through the golf course here.
Oh, yes.
And so my advice is keep watching, jot those notes down, see if you can rekindle that desire to write, because you've certainly got something to share and a strong voice.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Would you have any ideas of where you'd like to see In Conversation go? We have our little meetings about things. I'm in charge of finding the writers, and sometimes you've found through yourself or through Glenn more writers to interview, and they've all come through, which is exciting. Do you have some ideas for In Conversation?
I don't have any new ideas. I think what we're doing works well. You get really good feedback from the people you interview because you do interview them so well and you listen to people. And I think they come out with things that they didn't even know that they had in there to talk about themselves or their writing process or the end result of what they do. And the fact that you interview people in such a nonlinear way, you follow wherever they lead with whatever they're talking about and end up sometimes probably talking about things that you hadn't even thought about or they hadn't thought about. And that's part of what makes it interesting. It's not a formula. And I think that works.
Well, that's why it's called In Conversation.
Right.
We never know where a conversation is going to go when you have two interested parties conversing. And I would say that some of that happened today.
I'd say any number of people, when they've come in, are very nervous. Sitting in front of a microphone kind of frightens them. What we say to them is, it's a conversation. It's two of you having a conversation that we happen to be recording, and it's going to be edited, so it's not live. Just have a conversation with a friend. A lot of the people you already know, and some you've found various people in places, or some of the people that I've come up with are new to you, and those probably are interesting, too, and
they're all interesting, and I think we make a good team in terms of making them feel comfortable. And I think by the end of our conversations, they sort of feel like we know each other now. So that's the beauty of writing, and I think talking about writing. So before we end today, are there other things that you'd like to tell us about being the sound engineer to this program?
It's really been an interesting ride, and one we'll continue for the foreseeable future here, I hope. It's such a good creative process, even if I'm not editing like a print editor would edit. It still has its creative aspects, and I really find that to be maybe the most interesting part of it, is that I'm helping to craft what I believe the people would like to see when it's all done.
I think that's true. I think you're doing that. Earlier in the program, you said that when we're recording, you don't necessarily totally get involved in what the interviewee is talking about because you're concerned with sound levels and where our voices are and if we're in front of the microphone and all those kinds of things. And yet, when we usually have about 15 minutes between our interviews, we used to do four, now we do two in the same day. And yet, even with only part of your attention on the actual content, you're very moved by the writers. So what that says to me is that when we talk about writing, well, we're talking and reading. I mean, these writers all read, as you did, from their work. Something reaches us that's not through the head. Obviously, it's through the ears. But I have noticed that these things go directly to the heart. So I believe you are paying attention and therefore can create the program you feel these people wanted and that best spotlights their words on their craft and their impulse to write and their writing lives and their writing. So it's always seemed to me that you get a lot out of the tapings, even if you're very busy with the technical parts.
I think that's true, because when I go through the first edit, a lot of times it's like, oh yeah, I remember that and how I felt about it when it was being said. And then I'll hear something later on, especially that you forget about sometimes, and that it pops up. We did a repeat show a couple weeks ago with Holly Hughes, and she has a story in there about giving her mother a bath, and her mother had dementia at that point, that I remember from the first time, and again, just going through it, even as a repeat show, it was so moving, it was so beautiful. And there's been a few others like that too, that are just, they just stand out, and as soon as you hear them again, in the editing process, it's, oh yeah, I remember that.
It's like reading your favorite parts of a book over. Yeah. So I just want to say before we end that if people do want to listen to more of the programs from the past, In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life are available as podcasts on the kptz.org website, and they're available on writingitreal.com on the lower right-hand corner of the page. So I want to thank you for listening. And Charlie, thank you so much for coming forward and being in the spotlight. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.